Blog Talk Radio.
Tell my baby make it hot. Ride the cock till you hit the spot. Tell my baby make it hot.
Doing it doggy style. Wow, 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 yippee yo, yippee yo, bow wow, yippee yo, yippee yo. Wow, 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 yippee yo, yippee yo, bow wow, yippee yo, yippee yo.
And welcome to another screwed up version of Naked Soma. It's Professor Val here. I'd really like to have Dr. Mark on, but I can't get the board up so I can click him in. Apparently something's going on at the Blog Talk Radio. Again, hang on. Might have it here. Let me see. Did it work?
I don't know. Am I here?
I think you are.
All right. Well, let's start this deal all over again.
You know what? And you just snapped back off.
Oh.
And I saw another number up there, which might have been our guest. But I couldn't click on it. Okay, so would you like to hear the promo again here?
Yeah, please.
All right. I don't know if I'll be able to do it, but let me try.
Can you hear me now? We're in the air?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, folks. another, you know, one of those beginnings we could just put in the best of.
Yeah, there's definitely a problem at blog talk here.
Okay.
All right.
What else
is new? I'm clicking on the intro, and it's not going through. Do you know what telephone number our guest will be calling from?
Well, West Coast.
Tell my baby make it hot. Ride the cock till you hit the spot. Tell my baby make it hot.
Doing it doggy style. Wow, 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 yippee yo, yippee yo, bow wow, yippee yo, yippee yo. Wow, 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 yippee yo, yippee yo, bow wow, yippee yo, yippee.
All right, welcome back. I guess we're here.
Yep, and the switchboard just keeps going on and off, blinking. So if our guest is waiting there, all right, just hang on. We'll get to you as soon as we can.
There's always a little, you're arguing more than usual.
I am.
Mm-hmm.
I am. I spent most of the day transcribing, so my brain is fried.
You say no more. I'm the one that spit the words out in the first place.
Yeah, but they're good words. It's just you know.
Hey, how was that? How's that storm for you guys up there the last night?
What storm?
Oh, okay. Well, we had a storm.
Did you?
Unbelievable! It was like the end of the world. It was biblical. It was lightning, thunder, rain, wind that you could take your face off. And it was, like, you know, all gone by, like, 7 o'clock. But, like, from 4 o'clock to 6:30, it was brutal out there.
Okay.
I mean, I had to get my Dunkin' Donuts for dinner
and
at about 5:45. And I go into the Dunkin' Donuts, and I came in, like, what's his name from Rudolph, you know? Yukon
mm-hmm.
Cornelius.
Mm-hmm.
There's no fit for man or beast. Of course, the Indians behind the counter couldn't tell what I was doing, but the other guy in line laughed.
Oh, man. No, we didn't get any of that. Not,
well,
not
it was pretty good. It was pretty bad.
Jeez. Hey, should we do the Somatic Companion promo while we're waiting here?
Well, first I want to just, you know, play a little song for my friend Hillary.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. She's triumphant
while
last night.
Nauseate.
Well, it's kind of a little, it got me going last night, so I figured that maybe this will help the campaign. And it's the sound that's going to be heard when Obama pulls in the lead and they can't catch him.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, typical Napster crash.
Yeah, my Napster's been bad today.
Yeah, I don't know why anything that works anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They have anything that really functions with any kind of reliability except my bills.
Yeah, amazing how they never get lost or
no, they're always on
stuck.
Mm-hmm. Aye. But, you know, Hillary's, you know, in the pejorative sense, she is pounding her chest today.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard that blood-curdling speech last night she gave in Ohio that I swear would have walked her dead. But here's the song. See, it's coming up as the little Napster devil is doing its thing. Ah, Hillary.
Ugh.
Can't wait. Here's a second. That gunshot is Obama's head exploding, and as soon as he pulls ahead in the delegate lead.
Yeah.
Here we go. Everybody now. Get your eco on. Hey! That's it. That's our new theme song for the campaign.
There you go.
Shoot before they run now. I think Obama's gonna have the verb duck as his running mate pretty soon.
He probably should. The person who's on hold is not. It's not an area code from Oregon, so I don't know.
So let's find out what it is.
All right. Shall I click?
I'm clicking.
Go ahead.
All right. You're on the air at Naked Summer. How'd you find the number?
I'm your guest.
Oh, my God, you are our guest. Well, the heck with you. All right.
Are you
on a speakerphone or something? You're, like, echoing.
Yeah, is this better?
That's
oh, much
beautiful.
Better, much better. All right, well, Val, she suckered me in thinking it was actually, like, a question coming from the ethos. All right, whatever.
It's better. It may be an answer.
Well, hey, this guy's got lots of answers, believe me.
We got lots of answers, we just don't... Actually, I'm the other way around. I got a lot of questions, and nobody's got any answers, I think.
It's kind of a Karnak situation here.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I guess joining us now, live from somewhere out west, is Dr. Robert F. Alter. Washington State, okay, one of those things out west that nobody really worries about the borders.
Then that would be why. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's you and the bears and the wildfires, really. I mean, so this is Dr. Robert F. Alter, an alumni of... Pharmacology Chiropractic, when it used to be Chiropractic, back in the dinosaur age of 1984. And got an eclectic background in chemistry and some other stuff he's done with real estate, all kinds of weird things. And he's also dabbled in some woo, which we might get into, energy medicine, Reiki, things like that. And he's got some issues that we've been going back and forth on for about, I don't know, about 10 years now. We've been screaming at each other. Yeah, around there. Poor Matt McCoy refereeing in the middle. Facing the profession and the populace at the same time, because we're all about to go over the big cliff of, I don't hate to call it socialized medicine or whatever they want to call it, but this healthcare reform stuff that's coming up, and you guys got some issues out there locally in your state, and we're just going to bat around a lot of the philosophical tenets and maybe get into some principles. I don't know if they can handle that, but we might get into that. So just start us off. What is the, in proverbial Jay Leno language, what's your beef, basically?
Oh, mine is, you know, this whole healthcare, whatever we want to call it. We've let the nomenclature change to the point where we don't even know what we're talking about anymore. So, you know, when we have a system that makes people sick and we call it healthcare, that's a double speak that we're just letting slide. And we're not really focusing, even if you decide that you think it is healthcare and it's making you more healthy, what is it that you really want? What is it we can afford? If we're going to go to a single payer system, if the government's going to cover everything, I'm just trying to ask people to think and be a little bit more honest about what it is they want. And I was just involved in a committee meeting the other day, and I said, you know, what I think we really want to talk about is management or benefits for acute and chronic conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, you know, if my kid falls and breaks an arm, or, you know, somebody's sick, or whether it's an acute illness and they need drugs, chiropractic, or whatever, we want it to be the most effective form of care that's available. We want them to be able to get it when they need it. And if somebody's going to be sick for a long time, it's a chronic condition, we'd also like to be able to help them. On the other hand, we can't open this up to being anything that might promote health, which is what we've left things open to right now. And if anybody can come up with any kind of a drug, that they can come up with any kind of a study that might enhance our health, suddenly we're trying to pay for all this stuff. And in the long run, winds up proving not to be healthy after all. So
yeah, I always thought they had that box was backwards, because, you know, when I sat there and listened to Virgil Strang and the whole biological spectrum and adaptation and all that stuff, I always got confused because I said, you know, there is a definite floor to disease. They die. But there's no ceiling to how healthy somebody can be. But for some reason, the chiropractors were trying to operate in some kind of a bandwidth between when the disease got serious enough that the big guys had to take care of it, and, like, you know, chiropractor can't adjust someone with cancer. Chiropractor can't adjust someone with a heart disease. And I was like, why not? What do we care about that stuff? And the other side of it was when someone was asymptomatic or demonstrated no need for allopathic care, why would they get adjusted? So you couldn't justify your existence at all. And, of course, the politics just kept bleeding us in from both ends. Can't take care of that. Can't take care of this. Can't take care of that. Oh, they're asymptomatic. Get them out of there. Oh, they're a child. Can't take care of a child. Oh, they're too old. Can't take care of them. Pre-op, post-op. At a certain point, I just went, screw it. I ain't listening to any of you bastards. And, you know, of course, that attracted the press. But what you're saying, almost philosophically, you're saying it's designed to fail no matter what way you're doing it, from the consumer standpoint or the practitioner standpoint. So if you're trying, and this is kind of me being redundant, if you're working towards an outcome that is actually going to work, where would you start to move some of these blocks around so things can actually flow?
Well, first of all, I'd start with defining health. And
okay, how do you define
health?
You
can take any of them. Dorland's Medical Dictionary says health is optimal physical, mental, and social well-being and not merely the absence of disease or infirmity.
Mm.
So it's more than just feeling good. And if we look closely at the definition, it's optimal. And optimal is a pretty interesting word right there. It doesn't say maximal. It doesn't say minimal. Maximal might mean that we're expending the greatest amount of energy. Minimal would mean that we're not expending very much energy at all. What it really says is we're expending exactly the right amount of energy for physical, mental, and social well-being. Well, what is all of that? And how would you know whether you're spending optimal energy to attain those things? And what I'm trying to get people to see is it takes an intelligence to perform that function. To manage our energy so that we perform optimally requires an intelligence. And that's
okay,
where
so now
you're
now you're
going to
get, yeah, you're going to attract some noise with that. Now you got to define intelligence.
Exactly. And if you define intelligence as the ability to deal with new or trying situations, that's the definition I prefer to use. And if we look at how we've been taught from science in our school system, the process of evolution being that intelligence evolved from the interaction of energy and matter, we come up with a system that, from a logic standpoint, just can't happen. You can't have an intelligence that evolves from energy and matter. Intelligence has to exist outside the field. And that's a problem with our system that everybody, as soon as I talk to them for a little bit, pretty soon they start to see it. But as soon as we quit talking about it, they go right back to thinking intelligence can somehow evolve.
And yeah, this is something I guess that if you're not coming from a vitalistic or an open-ended worldview and you're coming from the framework that everything is entropic and everything's going to just head to heat death and you just slide off the planet after so many years of consuming things and defecating and walking about the planet, and they don't understand the intelligence was there before, during, and after.
Right.
They are looking at an organism separate from its environment, and basically it'd be like a fish out of water. It ain't going to live very long. So this intelligence is not limited to the human being, but it's actually innate to the human being, and it's also universal to nature, but they don't want to think about that because I don't think there's CPT codes for, you know, those things. And I just got back from a conference where a dude is getting a grant to study the degree that people have lost common sense in the culture. And you know how they have the misery index, you know, in finances? He wants to come up with a stupidity index. the economic cost for people lacking common sense.
Oh, boy.
So he's right. He's an eco on a mission. But the thing is that those basic building blocks that you just said, you know, defining health, defining intelligence, and defining it in terms that are functional, like you're using principles of adaptation, you know. The whole big thing, we interviewed Villadamo a couple months ago about epigenetics. You know, these things are somehow, they make it to borders, they make it to the bookshelf, they get popular, but they're not applied. We have all this information about brain-based learning. We don't apply it. And now we have all this information about how to deal with the aging process, and we don't apply it. How do you get people, I mean, I know there's financial agendas and all kinds of politics that prevent that, but how do you get the people to demand it if the people on the other side that are researching it and developing it can't get it out and can't get it publicized? How do you get the people to demand it?
Well, I think one of the things is doing what we're doing now. And one of the biggest opportunities we've got right now is this whole healthcare debate. But if we don't start talking about it and calling it what it is, if we allow the status quo to continue, I mean, I was at this meeting I was at, one of the ladies there says we've got to create this sea change event that's going to change the whole healthcare system, and yet all they're talking about is expanding Medicare. That's no that's no great change in thinking.
That'll work.
You know, that's no change at all, or just changing who's funding the current system. And there's just a total lack of thought behind the whole process. I was with a group of seven people trying to come up with how this could work, and I was the only one there that knew anything more about healthcare other than going to a doctor when you're sick. The rest of them didn't know any more about healthcare than that.
Mm-hmm.
And if those of us who've been involved for years don't step forward and start addressing some of these issues, it's going to continue to be as screwed up as it's always been, and it can only get worse. Can't get any better unless we start calling it what it is. And that's why I'm trying to start with the definition. Listen, you guys are lying to us right from the get-go when you talk about health care. When we think we can give health to another individual, that's the mistake right off the bat. The only thing, we cannot help another individual adapt. Only their own intelligence can help them adapt. We can help maybe help their body to recognize that intelligence or work with that intelligence better. And the best, I think, of course, it goes back to my chiropractic training, but I think I've seen medical doctors that, you know, sometimes perform as better chiropractors than some chiropractors because they're actually looking at the intelligence of the patient and trying to determine what's the patient trying to do.
Well, I'm breaking out in a cold sweat here. You said something a couple paragraphs ago, and I'm like, I think I just had the experience of agreeing with you, and I don't know what to do with myself. You said you can't give someone health. And I asked a question probably about 8-10 years ago that practically got me, you know, the rocks and garbage thrown at me. I said to a bunch of allopaths and scientists and researcher guys, is health contagious? Because you seem to feel very strongly that disease is. And I said, is health contagious? And they didn't know where to start to even begin to examine that. And you're saying you can't give someone health because health's a function of the intelligence that maintains the organism. So this is something that I don't think Ed has heard. You know, or any of these phones that are condition-based, because they seem to think if someone can get disease from the outside world, but they can't, they have to give themselves health, the onus is on the person, not the practitioner or the procedure or the intervention.
Exactly.
It's on the person. Yeah. But that's responsibility, and the people run away from that. So the two things I kept kind of like, you know, drumming through these politicians wherever I got a hold of them, like Orrin Hatch, if you're out there. If we meet again, Mr. Hatch, you know, telling me to sit down, son, all that kind of stuff. There's two functions of this. There's the accountability of the professional to do what they're trained and come up with outcomes that are realistic and timely and all that. And then there's the responsibility of the patient. I don't know how many times, I don't know what happens out your way, but you know, there's a lot of Starbucks and stuff out here. When I used to be on Palmer Avenue, I had the window. I finished taking care of someone. I'd go right outside with a cigarette in their mouth, get a Frappuccino, wave to me from the street. Hey, Doc, how you doing? What the heck am I? I just pumped your liver off your diaphragm for 20 minutes and told you a whole bunch of things to do to keep you healthy, and you said, what the heck am I doing here? So how do you get them out of throwing themselves back in the river because their compensations are all learned. They're all socially conditioned to go for those short-term, low-leverage ways to deal with stress. And like we talk about with Professor Vow students a lot, the adult brain has a really hard time dealing with habit. And if you hit 30 and you've got a lot of risk factors in your behavior, you're going to be in some fight club support group dealing with the fact that you can't stop eating chocolate or you can't stop smoking or, you know, all these other behaviors become part of your adult brain's operating system, and how do you get to the point where, you know, I mean, this stuff is not in the culture anymore when the culture's awash with it and nobody's paying attention to those things because there's no responsibility on the patient side. It's all on the heroic practitioners to come in with their, you know, pills, potions, lotions, creams, and knives and guns. And then if all that doesn't work, what, 3-4 adjustments should do it, right? You know, that statement about you cannot give someone health, that should be on the front door of every chiropractic office. Oh, my God, would that start a little debate. Because now the whole orientation changes. So when did you start saying that? Because you never said that to me. I would have agreed with you 10 years ago.
Oh, I started a long time ago. Actually,
okay.
one of the things that occurred to me is that, you know, if health could be, yeah, because it gets back to health, if it's really health care, if health could come from a bottle of pills, how much would you want?
Mm-hmm.
I'd want as much as I can get. If we're going to talk about health care and we're going to claim that we can give somebody health, well, then how much should we be spending on it? We should be spending the entire federal budget on it, right?
Yeah.
What's more important than my health? And if I can get more of it by taking more pills, then I'd be taking more pills. And it just can't happen. It doesn't work that way. We know that the more pills you take, the sicker you are.
Yep.
Well,
and
how do you break it down?
Even if you're taking the right pills. I mean,
mm-hmm.
nobody
can
disagree with that.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
that's the, you know, I just finished up with a client, you know, tonight in her 80s that had gone through the entire allopathic carousel from internist to rheumatologist to the MRI to all that stuff and painkillers and all that kind of stuff. And she just said, I ain't taking any of that crap. I'll be a vegetable in 5 years, you know. She was on to. And so I said, she goes, what do I need to learn to avoid these suckers? And I was like, wow, if every patient came to me at 20 with that attitude, you know, my God, but you don't have anyone engaged. What do I need to learn? I shook her by the shoulders. I said, why are you 80? You know. Because it's like, well, how do you get that attitude? Because the thing is, you know, that generation, the geriatrics, they're extremely... it's ingrained in them to be self-determining. They don't like to ask for help. They're very loyal to their practitioners. They have almost overly subservient to practitioners. They respect the doctors and stuff. She walks in. She'd just come from some meeting. She was all dressed up. I'm here in my T-shirt and jeans as usual. So she comes in. She goes, oh, I see you got all dressed up for me today. Right? This is the first time I ever met her. I said, well, you should have seen me a couple hours ago. I was in my pajamas, and I was a little more fresh. So she goes, don't worry about it. I just went out today to do a talk. She goes, normally I'm in my beach mama clothes. And, you know, and it's like that level of banter doesn't go on in an allopathic office. I mean, I just don't see it. Everyone's so stiff and so sort of cut off from the human element that you can't relate like real people. So everyone plays the phony game. You know, the white coats play their game and the patience, which means to suffer tolerantly. That's what that stupid word means. They do it. They suffer tolerantly. You ever go to an emergency room, you know, at a hospital, look at these people sitting around? It's become, I mean, you saw that movie Sicko, right, last year?
Yeah.
Now, as someone who's been in the field and sort of knows better, you're watching this movie. What are you thinking? What's your attitude watching the movie? You agreeing with Michael Moore? Or are you saying he's overemphasizing certain things? What was your take on the movie?
Actually, I was pleasantly surprised with the whole, I went actually prepared to be kind of opposed to whatever he was going to say to me, and I came away with an attitude that, you know, I think something's got to be done. Actually, I'm in favor of changing the whole system, and
mm-hmm.
I'm not, actually not even that opposed to some of the treatments. I just think we got to get away from the whole idea that people can be healthy by going to whether it's a chiropractor or any kind of a doctor, because it's self-responsibility. And we've got to change that behavior, and I guess I want to get back to where we're in agreement and how can we change that behavior. And I'm encouraged to think that maybe it can be done in the school system by something that happened to my wife in this last week. She teaches eighth grade in a middle school, and somehow the idea of smoking in the classroom came up. And in my state, you can't even smoke within, I think it's 100 yards of a classroom. And she was talking about how there was a smoking area when we were kids in the Midwest. There was a smoking area for the students.
Mm-hmm.
And these students couldn't believe it.
How's that work on the college campus? This is eighth grade. Valtor College. Did they smoke in the classrooms?
No. I would choke them.
You would choke them. Was there a policy against it?
Yes. Every classroom has a sign.
Wow. But eighth
grade, they
have to
keep it outside.
I don't even know if we have signs anymore. I mean, it's just a law. They catch you within. I don't even know if we can have tobacco on a person within 100 yards.
He's carrying tobacco. Yeah.
So it's become part of what amazed my wife is that how foreign that was to these students' thinking.
Mm-hmm.
That there was a place even where, and they said, well, we've heard that the teachers could even go somewhere and smoke. Oh yeah, there was smoking in the teachers' lounge. You could go smoke. Well, they just thought that was the funniest thing they'd ever heard.
Huh.
Hey, it's a very strange world because now the kids have gotten pretty smart, and they're not out trying to get recreational drugs that are illegal. Now they just take a bunch of cold medicine to get the same high.
Yep.
Over-the-counter drugs.
That's right, or they hit their parents' medicine cabinet, see what they got cooking in there.
Right.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of a book. It's like the Commandos Bartender of how you can mix things with Red Bull. The different medications to get different types of highs, and go to these raves and stuff. You know, and basically for less than $5, you're high as a kite for hours, and you don't have to worry about the cops or anybody. And they're driving, and so it's like this is a drug culture. I used to always try to remind myself that when I first started in practice, that this is a drug culture. From cradle to grave, there is not one iota of shame about that. From the moment that the mother is pregnant, the drugs come out. And so when they get nuts about, you know, Willie Nelson and his marijuana or Woody Harrelson and his hemp or whatever, I just go, you know, it's just a case of bad lobbying for that particular drug. Every other drug, I mean, they run with flags. They give you a pen. They give you a ruler. They give you a magnet. They go off to – I think it's almost at this point, it's almost sort of like surreal that the chiropractors are and all the people that have crossed over to that, that's not so much that they're drug-free, but they're conscious of this. The rest of the world just seems to like these kids. They almost like they don't even know they're in it, you know. And the evidence to me was the last time I went to Sherman College was after 9/11 there, and they had the anthrax things going on out here in the East Coast, and everybody was running around taking what's that drug, Cipro, whatever it was, and it was scarring lungs and causing all kinds of problems. It was like the Fen of our time, and in England, they didn't have enough money for this antibiotic for the population, so they advised everyone to eat more garlic.
Oh, go figure.
Know,
mm-hmm.
4 cents a person, natural antibiotic, and nobody panicked. And here, they were duct taping their home shut and sucking the antibiotics.
Mm-hmm.
So it almost is like there's almost an assumption that your body is not efficient. That's why they're mandating the vaccines now. Are they doing that out west yet? Are you guys getting that?
Oh, yeah.
Mandating the vaccines every year, they raise the number. You know, and now there's like 32 or 33 of them in New Jersey and that you have to get, and they're getting into the papillomavirus for the teenage girls now. Okay, I just heard the eco. So we defined health before. Now let's just get, first of all, bouncing some things off you here. If you had to define mental health, like what defines sanity as far as the APA, you know, roll it out definition? What's mental health?
Sanity is a legal term anyway.
Okay. Well, what's mental health? Is it the sound mind and body? What do they say?
What I think is an accepted definition is that whatever is going on in your head isn't enough to interfere with your everyday functioning. Once it has... You know, change your everyday functioning. Well, no, because you function the same way every day. Nothing's changed.
Yeah, but who's evaluating functioning? Does that mean that you can get your stuff done? You're productive. You're a good member of society.
Yeah, you know, you can get up and get to work. You can feed yourself. You know, I mean, there are different levels of depression. You have the person that's walking around that's kind of sad, low level depression, and then there's the one that can't get out of bed and they won't even shower. So that's where you start crossing some lines. When you just can't function, then get a reach out, and by then they don't want to. And then somebody puts them on drugs that gives them a little boost, and they go try to kill themselves.
Yeah, it seems like a pretty failed model, but we keep using
mm-hmm.
it. So now let's cross over this next line, because now we start delineating who can work on the meat and who can work on the gravy. You know, in somatics, we're dealing with an integration. There is no body in somatics, because that would be like the thing that you stick in the ground. There's a self and there's surroundings. So when you're dealing with an organism that's adapting to its environment, straight, you know, vitalistic, chiropractic 101, and you're out there, you know, in the West Coast, I'm not sure what the scope of practice is in your state, but in New York, it's extremely physical, extremely literal. The conditions are neuromusculoskeletal. They're very mechanical in the way they define what a chiropractor is supposed to be doing. And yet they give you your regulation comes from the Department of Education. So you're supposed to educate people about their lifestyle and maintain the frame of the body and whatever, all the mechanical stuff. But like I asked the researchers in the wake of 9/11, when someone has, you know, an emotional overload or a spiritual problem or something like that, and they flip up on the table having a reaction, you know, the guy recommended I called a PhD in different religions or something. Like, are you nuts? I got to have a hot phone to call a priest if someone has... So in your practice experience, not so much the law, how do you deal with emotional, social, relationship stuff as it manifests physically in the course of a case? I mean, you guys, I know the scope practice might say one thing, but how do you personally approach that stuff? Because it's supposedly, you know, that's the mental stuff, but you can't touch that stuff. Mind-body separate thing. So how do you guys, how do you deal with it personally?
I haven't found that I needed to get into that very much. It hasn't become a big part of my practice.
So,
and
like,
yet it's interesting because it's one of those things that I guess I get into it a little bit on an individual basis,
mm-hmm.
but...
Well, just dealing with pain. Pain's going to bring up emotions. At least it does on the East Coast.
Right. It brings up, yeah, it brings up some emotions, but I don't find that that's what's, well, it's true. And how do I deal with it? I try to approach it kind of from a logical standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Is the process that you're going through, is it based on some form of reality, you know, and your thinking process, if you wanted to change it, if you change it, what would be the change? How would your life change? And part of this gets back to my definition of intelligence by saying that intelligence has to be outside the physical realm, means that it's also outside the programming. So the programming that we're doing, what you talk about as far as the mental stuff, the habits and things that we get into, it's not
mm-hmm.
that I don't recognize those, but I think that there's a part of us that can decide that we're not going to do that anymore. And once we decide that, then we become aware of it, and we can start making changes in our behavior. And that's the power that I've been trying to get across to people if I'm doing any type of counseling, is that you do have a choice. You don't have to be programmed in spite of everything. And I keep seeing, I guess that's if there's something as far as counseling that I keep running into, it's the programming issue. Is everybody mm-hmm. believes it, and it gets back to healthcare even. You know, what is health? If I just ask somebody, well, it's being free of disease, well, where'd you get that idea? You know, trying to get people to challenge their assumptions. And even
well,
about
free of
pain,
symptoms even. They get down to that, right? The health is being, I am symptom free.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know,
exactly.
Which could be. That could be cancer in 20 years, but I'm not evaluating my function. I'm just going, hey, I'm
well, I don't have
her.
A fever. I just had somebody with MS tell me she's quite healthy because she doesn't have the flu.
Oh, geez.
And she doesn't get the flu. And she considers herself to be healthy. She just has MS. And she can barely walk, but she considers herself to be healthy.
Oh, man.
You know, it's a pretty interesting predicament because, as an example in this particular person, was feeling fatigue and actually needed some rest, but couldn't
mm-hmm.
get the rest because she was determined that she needed to do something to make herself better.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a
well,
fine line because then I've got the next person comes in, I can't get him off his butt. You know what I mean?
I know
and yet,
what you mean.
If he listens to himself but he goes and does something, he finds he actually feels better. Well, will he pay attention to that? No.
Well, one of the things that got me frustrated in the research community was that if they could spend the time and energy to find out that there was, at the time I was doing the research around 2003 or 4, there was over 90 million Americans that were assessed to be what they call health illiterate, which means they could not effectively communicate what was going on in their life or their body to their practitioner with enough accurate terms, and they couldn't understand what was being suggested to them enough that they couldn't implement anything. So the language barrier, as the culture's become, more polylingual, and then the medical jargon on top of it, and then the pharmaceutical jargon on top of that, but all the off-labeling and everything that goes on. And then you have the other strategy where they go to 16 different doctors and they don't let the doctors talk to each other, so all these drugs are interacting and no one even knows that they're on it. And then there's all the stuff they're doing outside of that, like they go to the health food store or they try their friends, beeswax or something. You're never getting a clean shot at a client. So that's why I opted for the nonverbal. Shut up. Let me just observe you and look at the physiology, because when you're trying to teach someone about something that's so foreign to them, and it sounds like you've had the same frustration I've had, their way of evaluating it is on a completely different set of standards than yours. And you can't impose your standards on them. You have to take their standards and you, like you say, challenge them and let them fall down on their own accord and make it self-evident for that person. And so, all these policies and all these plans that they're trying to do, to me, they're going to fall on deaf ears, because as long as the drugstores are open 24 hours a day and the bars close at 4 o'clock in the morning, there's two big kickstands out there. And so I don't know, individually, knee-to-knee, client-to-client, if you can really do much to affect that person's life long-term, because it's surrounded by a lot of enabling factors that are going to just, like you say, they're going to go right back to the old behavior, and they're not going to make those changes. So, in terms of the profession now, because you've had a lot of issues within the profession, let's talk about subluxation. It is 9:36 on the East Coast. You're here on Naked Soma with Dr. Affolter and Professor Val and myself. Let's see, we have anyone up there? It's 646-478-4847. I say, just like you were saying before, and I was actually half clapping with one hand here, that the center of chiropractic should be intelligence, because if you look at those 33 principles, and I'm actually staring at the book on my shelf over there, it mentions intelligence 33 times in 33 principles. It only mentions subluxation 3 times. So even Stevenson, the lord of the chiropractic philosophers, knew that intelligence was the story and subluxation was sort of its manifestation that it wasn't working well. And I think subluxation is a manifestation of intelligence. But that's me. So what would you make the center of the profession as far as taking a practitioner who wants to learn these principles and apply them in the drug culture in 2008 and beyond, and you're going to teach them this sort of, incomplete and very narrow-minded thing that it's all this mechanical stuff when we got all this other knowledge that's sort of happening, but the intelligence is really the center of this. How do you get them to learn about something that's sort of immaterial and hard to quantify?
Well, I think it's happening. Let me give you an example. My wife went in for surgery last summer, and of course, she feels terrible afterwards, and she doesn't feel like, I guess we're in the second or third day, and her doctor comes in, and, what am I supposed to eat? And he said, well, your body will let you know, if you don't feel, if you're feeling nauseous, that's God telling you that you're not supposed to eat, and that's from the surgeon, okay?
Wow, he gets to talk about God?
Yeah.
Wow.
Listen, that's what I'm saying, if you're around enough physicians,
mm-hmm.
And pretty soon, and you actually listen to what they're telling their patients, I was shocked. This guy was talking more like a chiropractor than a lot of the chiropractors I talked to.
And if a chiropractor said that, they'd be all over him. Yeah.
I just found it refreshing, And, of course, the next guy that comes in is not like that. And then, of course, then I get the challenge. We've got her, she's got a fever, so they've got her on antibiotics just perpetually, and she thinks they're making her worse. So I ask, a different physician, a different gynecologist comes in, maybe you can try, I'm not trying to tell you what to do, but maybe you could try a different antibiotic. She thinks this one's making her worse,
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, he just hits politely, stays in his chair, but, you know, politely hitting the roof and going, well, you know, if we're going to change something, I got to call in the infectious disease guy then. So they call in the infectious disease guy, and he looks at her, and he goes, well, her white blood count's okay. She just got a fever. There could be all kinds of reasons for having a fever. Doesn't mean she's got an infection. So, you know, I've got more hope, I guess, than...
Yeah. We have another doc on the line here, Dr. Jeb Thurman, joining us from the Hinterlands in New Hampshire. You out there, Jeb?
Hey, Jeb.
I'm here.
How are you?
All right,
good.
So we're hanging here with Dr. Affalter, 84, graduate of Palmer, and he's just about as flippin' frustrated as we are, but I think he's sort of at the point of being a little bit amused by the entire project, because the allopaths are entertaining you out there to no end. I don't, they're not entertaining me.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like I actually gave one of them the when I was up at Wellesley College about 2 weeks ago there, just a little chiropractic story. You've probably given it to. Two people go to the restaurant. They both eat, you know, a fish that's been poisoned. One person goes home, sleeps very comfortably, has absolutely no symptoms, and is dead in the morning. And the other one is thrown up all night in the toilet. Which one's healthy?
Right.
You know, and the... sort of the liar's paradox came up, you know, because this person was breaking down all the language. And I, you know, we've had Dr. Jeb on the line, you know, lots of times talking about, you know, raising his infield over there, all his kids, and the health challenges they've incurred. I've had, you know, my challenges too with my kids. And it just seems like, until it hits you personally, how much the machine is inside people's heads and the way they think about certain things and the way they sort of just, I don't know, instead of just plug and play, and they never let the individual have a say. It's like, well, you know, you have diabetes, that's it. Or you have this, that's it. And there's, especially when you're dealing with developmental kids and special needs kids, you have autism, that's it. And then there's almost no way for the kid or the family or anybody else around them to function independent of that condition. Like even something as simple as asthma, they've made that into this, like, boogeyman. You know, so... we were just talking about subluxation, Jeb, a minute ago. And,
oh, I heard you.
Yeah. So, yeah. You've had an interesting arc with this thing because you were in the middle of the inner sanctum of the so-called subluxation community as it gets. Me and Affalter have been kicking around, you know, at the fringes of it, trying to get them to pay attention. So, you're running a wellness clinic up there, and it's now multidisciplinary, right? You got a couple different practitioners in there helping people out, right?
No, I got
massage there.
Okay. I got massage. Yeah,
and you're also running this online catalog, this Alisante Wellness. It has a lot of, you know, lifestyle stuff and things like that. So,
yeah.
How do you deal with the fact that most people are going to use so-called holistic stuff in an allopathic way? How do you start re-educating them, you know, out of that pattern?
Did you hear my sigh?
So that was a sigh. It was almost an eco sigh, yeah.
That was good.
Yeah, I just didn't get to. As long as they, you know, I have two sides of me. If they're buying the products off Alisante or buying the products off the shelf, I really don't care how they use it. In one sense, in the side of let's keep it moving. But the other way, yeah, I mean, I'm frustrated with wanting them to get. Like, I'll tell you what drives me crazy is calcium and vitamin D. Well, my doctor got me calcium and vitamin D because of my bones. I always go, listen,
right.
Your bones need bone food. They don't need calcium and vitamin D necessarily. So that's just one little teeny microcosm of this big thing, of this big, you know, this. It's just this big mind fuck of, okay, it's so, you know, broken down, reductionist. And so do I care? Yeah, it drives me crazy. Do I act on it? Sometimes I'm too tired. You know, It's not that I'm not excited about it. I'm very excited. Now, if I have somebody who will hear me, I'll talk to them about it. I had a lady today, and I kind of went a little bit nuts with it. And she's like, well, how come they're not telling anybody? I can't believe they're just panning out those pills up there. And I said, because that's what they do, because they don't really, number one, don't understand it, and they don't care. It's like trying to explain coherence to people. For I don't know what Doc Affalter does, and I know what you do, Mark, and I know what I do. But I mean, like, I'm assuming he's doing some brand of some Affalter brand, like I do my brand and you do your brand, you know?
Yeah, well.
And so when we look at that, and you go, really what, I mean, I know what you and I always, pretty much it always comes down to coherence, right? So it's like, I don't care what you do as long as they get coherent from that, and how can I create sustainability and stability? That's all I always talk about. And it's like, they still want to, they still then come back and they go, oh, I'm out again. It's like, you know, what do you do? Do you close your doors? Because sometimes I feel like that's the only way I can, you know, really get the message out is to just write about it. Because when they're hurting and they're in the practice, I mean, you can create the wellness stuff, and that's good, and I do a lot of that. But the general population, we don't have enough money or resources to get it, the word out there as fast as we would like. I mean, that's, and I don't mean to be like, oh, you know, giving up and we'll never get there. I think it's a good fight. But I think at some point you got to go look at the billions and billions that are spent in marketing to these people every day, and can we really put a – we can put a dent in our inner circle and our, maybe the people in our sphere of influence, and we can work towards it. But our profession is, you know, kind of fractured anyway, so it's difficult to put together
Putting it mildly, it's fractured.
Yeah, I was being,
it's politically inert is what it is. I mean, actually, the three of us here, being on the phone, we're gonna wrap up in a minute. We all have crossed the path of one Hillary Clinton in one way, shape, or form. Boy, oh boy, you're really rattling off the us tonight. Just looking at her campaign and the way she's been breaking it down, the fact that she pulled off of Houdini in Ohio last night, notwithstanding. Looking at her objectively as a candidate and her vision for things, we talked a little about, you know, socialized medicine before and things like that. How do you stop that monster that is preying on the fears of people? That it's almost like it's a pit in the pendulum. The government can't give you health. The county can't give you health. The licensed professionals can't give you health. This is what, you know, we've been talking about here with Rob here. How do you get to the point where the person will take the responsibility, not just for their management of their symptoms, but for actually elevating their performance as they get more and more mature, instead of waiting for things to fall apart? I just find this mindset. Carlin was on this weekend. I don't know if you guys saw the George Carlin special on HBO. And he just says, he goes, you got to just get to the point where you realize these people are not working in your best interest. They don't care. And there's almost an assumption that they're supposed to care, or that they should care, or that there's some moral, some kind of switch in their back that, oh, they really care. If you look at Katrina, you look at things, they don't care. So it's like, what has to happen in the...
How about a trailer? Here, have a trailer. It's full of formaldehyde.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I find that it's like, what has to happen for them to realize that these impersonal sort of bureaucratic systems that are designed to just pump money out of you are not there for your best interest? I mean, there's no way in the world, you know, any pharmaceutical company is getting up in the morning going, what are we going to do to make sure that these poor sapes don't get sick about the, you know, the later from this stuff? So I'll just, you know, I'll go, you know, around the room here. What would you say the biggest misconception is that you guys can clear up on a daily basis in a client's mind about the world that they live in that relates to the way you take care of them? So we'll start with Jeb first. Like, what can you tell a client tomorrow that's going to clear up a misconception they have or an assumption they have about the world they live in, you know, with the vaccines and all the stuff we've been talking about, that will wake them up to the fact that it's up to them. It's not up to the world around them to take care of them. How would you start that conversation with them?
I guess the one that comes to mind first is it's real simple. I tell them to take, you know, a bottle of Tylenol or a bottle of ibuprofen or any of their over-the-counter meds even, and ask them would they take them when they're feeling healthy. And then, you know, they say no because it'll make you sick. And I go, well, then what does it do for you when you're sick? And so, you know, when you kind of give them that real simple thing, that's a, you know, a microcosm of the bigger picture, which is they're not trying to make you healthy. You know, it's really all about, you know, it's about lining their pockets is what it's about. I mean, listen, if somebody's really hurting and they do a Tylenol and it makes them feel a little better locally for the short term, it's a good thing. But in the big picture, it's, you know, it's drugs is drugs is drugs.
Well, like I tell, all parachutes open. It's just how close you, to the ground you are when they open, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know. All right, so wrapping it up there, Doc, what would you say to them tomorrow when you go out and they come in and they go, you know, I just found out that they're mandating that we all have to take liquid wrench. You know, what is it that you can say to them that would give them somewhat of a wake-up call that maybe all these bureaucratic systems are not actually operating in their best interest?
Well, this question seems to wake people up, whether it's doctors or patients. What's the cause of health? Nobody's thought about it. What do you think's the cause of health?
Do they ever answer intelligence?
For hundreds or thousands of years for the cause of diseases, and yet we never look for the cause of health.
Salutogenesis.
Then if I can get them back to the intelligence part of it, then we start to see that, hey, that part of you is what's keeping you healthy, and how can we work best with that? And you're different than everybody else. And if we try to make you like the norm, you won't be different. You won't be unique. You won't adapt to your environment to be you. How can we help you be you?
Yeah.
Yeah, like I said, you have been picking it up and putting them down for, you know, finding them, fixing them, leaving them alone for, you know, a long time. And I got to hand it to you. You've always been sort of like a stubborn nut out there to me, but in a good way, because, you know, a lot of these other guys, they're full of hot air, and you ask them a couple of questions, and they kind of back down. But you never back down. You always come back with a couple more of these, you know. So it's like this thing you shared tonight about you can never give someone else health is something that I swear if anyone's listening to this and then they go and watch any of these political speeches about reform and how they're absolutely it's such a bald-faced distortion of the truth. Maybe that little statement you just said, what's the cause of health, and then if you give them the answer of intelligence, and then you give them the definition of intelligence, give that just at the end of the show here, so we gave it before. What's your definition of intelligence again?
The ability to adapt to new and trying situations.
Okay, which is it's part of the sense of coherence stuff. It's stuff we talk about. It's basically resiliency over time and the ability to adapt to, like you said, to the environment on the fly. And this is that rhythm we talk about, self and surroundings and somatics. So we're not that far away anymore. The bridge
exactly.
is being built. So, you know, thanks for joining us tonight. And like I said, we'll have this up on the server. You can share it with your clients, and they can, you know, walk around with the T-shirt with the question on the front and the answer on the back and your phone number on the bottom there. It'll be a cool deal.
Well, thanks to all of you. It's been a fun night.
Thanks, Bob.
Yeah. All right. Thanks.
Hey, appreciate it, Bob.
Back to the Wilderness RCA. All right.
All right.
Bye-bye. Take care. Have a good night.
You too. All right. Let's see. Ah, interesting.
He's a saucy shape, isn't he?
Yeah. Switchboard is actually working properly. Shall we play a quick promo?
Yeah, 1 second. Something strange. Can you label food? Who you gonna call? Ghostbusters! It's something weird. And it don't look good. Who you gonna call?
Ghostbusters!
Mm-hmm.
There
you go. All right,
yeah,
so we're gonna...
Girls last week, but I forgot to play it.
We kind of fit today with the whole ghost in the machine. Okay.
It does.
How it's reaching. All right, so we're going to play our little promo. We'll get back and wrap it up here. So
all right,
go ahead.
Got it.
Click play.
Yeah. There it is.
Hey, Sapes, do me a favor and answer this question.
How will your life be different and better a month from now?
There's ways to guess at it.
You could call a psychic or consult the oracle.
Or you could...
follow the moon.
That's right, Sapiens. Us radicals at Naked Soma have taken our act on the road with you.
Just go to the site somaspace.org and click on the link at the top of the homepage.
That'll take you to the page of our brand new 30-day emotional makeover audio program called...
The Somatic Companion.
Listen, we know you're fed up with humanity, so we designed a program to help you rise above it all.
Tell them what they get to know.
Everyone craves the same basic things from life at 6 years old as you do at 66 years old. The unseen force that binds us to our behavior is our emotions.
We've assembled 15 years of cutting-edge research into a user-friendly series of 7 to 10-minute daily audios that help you develop something called positive physiology.
Mm-hmm. And by riding the waves of positive physiology, you'll naturally reconnect with your self-extreme, the appetite for change.
It's moon over matter.
Blast off is a click away. Look, it's goofier every time.
Yeah. We do have fun making those things, though.
Mm. All right, so I'm going to give you my best minute and a half of Somascope, so as I'm having my
Hershey's with
almonds. Start.
King size, washing it down with some green tea.
You know.
Mm-hmm. I'm a product of my culture. So anyway, where the heck are we here? We're in an XO week till Friday. I mean, it's going to be a Philo weekend, everyone. So, again, we are having some funkadoo going on out there because we are changing the clocks this weekend. Oh, the chronoscopic catastrophe it is. Before the equinox, again, they've defied the gods. And they did it on a Philo weekend, and the Philos love when they mess with time. So, prepare for a little mental retardation, a little incoordination, and a lot of gastrointestinal putrefaction.
Okay.
All across the board, yes. The land will be littered with fermenting proteins. So, if you know how to front-load that sucker, get yourself a bucket of baking soda and some seltzer water. And before you eat any big meal, between now and next time we chat next Wednesday, on the other side of the time change, you just take maybe about an 8-ounce glass of the seltzer water, a couple of scoops of baking soda in there, maybe a tablespoon's good enough, and about 40 minutes before you eat, you just down the sucker, and that'll prime your stomach to make a little more acid to digest your proteins. So that's a way to kind of get around the time change, because the first thing that goes is the rhythm in your gut lining, and of course, if that goes, that taxes everything else, immune system and everything else, and so prepare for that. All boats will be speeding up. All thyroids will be activated. Immune systems fly out like toasters. The bear comes out of the cave, and the lion's there to greet it. So that's sort of the long and the short of it for the somascopes this week. It affects us all across the boards. Of course, the phylos get it the worst, then the ecos, then the ontos, and if the exos are left, they might have to, they'll have to behave like the rest of us for a couple of days. So that's it for this week. Next week, more news because we're getting close to the big equinox. So turn it over to Dr. Jeb and his tip of the week.
Okay, here we go.
Ah! I feel good.
Simple this week. It's a page out of the Somatic Companion. It's just breathe and move and feel. It's something that we talk about all the time. And, man, this is something I use in my practice every single day. It's the first thing I tell people, you know, after their first adjustment, is that their job now is to simply breathe, move, and feel. And it's life-changing. I mean, people are, you know, blood pressure's lower, stress, it's everything. So the way I put it to them is a little bit different than, I think, the way that Mark puts it. But I tell them, first you got to breathe, and if you can't breathe, you can't move. So you got to breathe, and then you got to move yourself a little bit. And then you start to feel, and what I tell them is to feel and sort of feel how you feel. Take a look at how you feel. Check back in with yourself, and then do repeat, rinse and repeat, breathe, move, feel, breathe, move, feel. So anytime you start feeling, your throat gets a little tight, you get a little high, your voice gets a little bit high, you're coming on this time change, you're freaking out a little bit, just remember to breathe, move, and feel.
Uh-huh.
All right. Okay, well, we have covered pretty much, I think, stem to stern as far as topics today. So we will turn it over to Professor Val for her quote to sum it all up.
Pay attention, son. This is for your own good.
All right. So since we were talking about health care, which makes me absolutely insane, if stupidity got us in this mess, then why can't it get us out?
Well, hey, I'm all for more stupidity, believe me.
Mm-hmm.
Hijinks, even.
For sure.
All right. Well, who the heck's on next week?
Hang on, and I'll tell you, unless we run out of time. I have to pull it up on my stupid computer. I'm still getting used to. Okay, here we go. It is, it's Dr. Blogstein, if we can get him confirmed.
Oh, my God. All right. Well, prepare for hijinks. There it is. Dr. Blogstein.
Last time he thought he was confirmed, and he wasn't.
I was confirmed in the 80s, but, look what that led.
Oh,
the
please.
The Catholics are still apologizing. All right, so for Dr. Raphael Durant West and Dr. Jeb, myself, and Professor Val, this has been Naked Soma, Travel Light Through the Darkness.
Blog Talk Radio.